to do that. So, you know, that's another point with grants, is you got to be a little careful with it because of staff time.
So, Ken, let me turn to you and ask you a little bit, both on your perspective about how the conservation communities and others might make some progress in this next legislative session, although there are many unknowns, obviously, about what the various committees are going to look like. In terms of getting cities a little closer to the 140 gallons per capita per day goal, as Chairman Puente, you weren't here, but one of the things we found in the report we did looking at the 18 municipal water conservation plans is that the goals varied widely from some fairly low 120, 116 GPCD to in the high 200s and even a 301 in some areas of the city. So there's a very wide range of 5- and 10-year target goals. And so my question to Ken is, not that 140 is necessarily a magic number, but it is qualitatively different than some of the goals that are showing up in some of the plans we reviewed.
Well, let me make a comment first that's a little more general than a specific response to that. In terms of what I think is really needed to be the backdrop to the whole effort to try to advance water conservation in the state, and it has to be a comprehensive approach with a lot of different elements to it, but what I think is really the most important backdrop is to have, and Carol will love me for this, a statewide public awareness program about water to actually make people aware of where their water comes from and give them some sense of ownership of their water. There was some public opinion research that was done after the Water Conservation Implementation Task Force of a few years ago that some of us served on that recommended a statewide public awareness program. And some of the public opinion research done as a result of that had some very interesting findings. And one of the findings was that only 28%, I believe was the figure, of Texans said they definitely knew the source of their drinking water, which means that 72% did not think they knew the source of their drinking water. And even some of the 28% who thought they knew the source of their drinking water didn't really know the source of their drinking water. Now, you know, it's very hard, I think, to get people to just decide to conserve water in some abstract sense unless, you know, they're a real do-gooder like most of us in this room, just out of some general altruistic motive. I think that, you know, one of the advantages that San Antonio has had in terms of being so successful at water conservation is that most San Antonians know the source of their water. It's pretty much been the Edwards Aquifer. And so when there was a sense there was a need to protect that source of water, I think they were more willing to come forward and do what was necessary to protect it. So I really think that we need to have some funding from the state to establish on a more consistent basis throughout the state the Water IQ program, which is basically the public awareness program we're talking about, as a backdrop to everything else that all the individual utilities are doing, you know, because it helps to provide that backdrop. So I think that is a key for the overall approach, and I also think it would help in terms of achieving the 140 gallons per capita per day. I do want to say a couple of things about the 140 gallons per capita per day, though. One is that don't take it as a magical figure. That was a compromise on the Water Conservation Implementation Task Force. Some of us were pushing 125 gallons per capita per day as the target, and we compromised, you know, in order to get something out of the task force, frankly, that was reasonable. And also, you know, reflecting the fact that there are problems with trying to use gallons per capita per day as your only real benchmark for determining the progress or success of a water conservation program. So don't get too hung up on the 140 gallons per capita per day. I really think that what we need to do is make sure that cities, water utilities are setting realistic but achievable and somewhat aggressive targets, whether it is strictly the 140 gallons per capita per day or 125 or whatever, and make sure they are moving forward. If you're talking, if we can, you know, look strictly at residential water use, then the gallons per capita per day probably makes more sense if you can put it at that level. But for other things like commercial use of water, you know, the gallons per capita per day doesn't really make any sense. So we're looking at a whole bunch of other potential metrics for how you evaluate water conservation in progress.
Mean anything. Right.
Right.
Citizen, very much. If they hear that Wimberley Water is losing 89 gallons per day per connection, they say, oh my God, my water friends are living on that.
That's right. It's a very good point, Jack. I like that. Let me ask a couple more questions, and then I'll open it up. Just a couple more, because I know one thing that's come up and one issue where Chairman Puente worked very hard during several sessions is this idea of the control that homeowners associations have over landscaping. So I know it's a favorite topic, but I just wanted to see if I could get both Jan and Chairman Puente to weigh in a little bit on how do we really take on that sort of homeowner, what looks good on a landscape issue from your different perspectives?
Well, again, we had to start from such a almost childish, unbelievable point where some of the covenants dictated that you had to have St. Augustine grass.
Right.
That did not allow you to build decking in the backyard, even. That did
so
not,
we cover up that St. Augustine.
That they essentially mandated uniformity, and that uniformity used a lot of water.
Yeah.
So we started there, and again, bill was filed. It would unfortunately, this bill would get referred to a land and resource management, which is a totally different animal than natural resources. And invariably, it would fail. Finally, we did pass the bill, but we got to the point where so many compromises had to be made that it's still a big work in progress. One hope that we do have is that a lot of the abuses of homeowners associations when they deal with other things, such as notice to the homeowners when they're going to foreclose, just simple things like that, not being allowed to put a patriotic flag out in front of your house, has put a bad taste in a lot of legislators' minds about homeowner associations, mandatory ones. And so this has allowed us a little flexibility to show how it is, how simply legislation can help what they actually want to do and is good for the homeowner. Is not going to be a free-for-all, as you know, people having cactus in front of their yards that they're very afraid of, not just the pointy things, but I don't know why they're afraid of those. But yes, it's a tremendous uphill battle,
right,
and we're still very low in that fight. Yeah.
And Jan, Laura mentioned when you gave your water use figure for San Marcos and how nice and low it was, she said, yeah, it's all those students with their dead lawns when San Marcos be so low. But can you give us a little bit of perspective from San Marcos? And then we'll open it up to questions from you all.
Yeah, the students really don't do a very good job taking care of their lawns. That might contribute some. But, I mean, as far as the homeowners associations, we haven't really had to deal with that. I mean, we do have an ordinance that prohibits them from, you know, requiring St. Augustine grass and that kind of stuff. But fortunately, the issue hasn't really come up, and I'm hoping that it does. And I hope that means that there's just not homeowner associations in San Marcos that are doing that. When I drive around, you know, there's a lot of areas in San Marcos, and lots of the newer areas are sort of out, you know, in the country a little bit. And actually, some of them are really kind of just going with the natural native type stuff, you know, which is great. So it hasn't come up. If anybody ever contests our ordinance, or, you know, I'll just hand that over to the legal department and let them deal with it.
That's what we live for. That's what we lawyers live for. Ken, do you want to say anything about this? Or should we go there?
Oh, I don't want to touch home on this.
Good. Why don't we open it up to y'all for about 10, 15 minutes? Question, Tom?
Yeah, that was part of our irrigation system ordinance that we passed in 2006. You can't have sprinklers on any strip less than 6 feet wide. You can use drip, surface or subsurface drip. You cannot have sprinklers. So that was definitely part of that ordinance.
Right there.
Related to that, that was one of the things that we looked at in College Station and realized where we were shooting ourselves in the foot. You know, on one hand, the water utility is trying to get people to conserve and retain our heat capacity, but then on the other side of town, our development services department was requiring people to put in parking lot islands, so it's a narrow strip of grass, and then they required irrigation on that. So
very interesting point. That's that's a great point. Brent? I think that's a good point. I think we learned a lot from Tim this morning about Metropolitan Water District and sort of the power of that regionalization on a conservation message.
Yeah, I think actually, I mean, that's definitely a great idea. And I think partnerships are something that has been really underutilized in this whole water conservation issue. Karen and I were just actually talking about the Caroma toilets during lunchtime, because obviously when...
Nice lunchtime conversation.
Yeah. What else would we talk about? But, you know, obviously, I mean, when we bought them to do our distribution program, we bought, you know, like 150, you know, not 28,000. So we ended up paying a whole lot more for them. That is definitely something that bears talking about amongst the cities and... you know, I know San Antonio has been helpful. Austin has, too. A lot of the stuff that we do, we just kind of look to those bigger guys and see what they're doing and kind of try to pare it down to fit our city. But I think there's also a lot of things that smaller cities could do together, you know? I mean, Kyle, Buda, San Marcos, New Braunfels, we're all kind of right there, you know, together. So partnerships would be a good idea, and we've talked a little bit about those, and we've done some, like we're doing a teacher workshop along with GBRA and NBU and some other folks. So there has been some of that, but I think really there could and should be a whole lot more of it.
I don't know, Chairman Puente or Ken, do you have any thoughts about sort of the regionalization issue following up on what Brent asked there? Because I was really struck by the power of what Met's able to do at that scale, 18 million people and 300 different retail water entities within it.
It just sounds very obviously a great idea, sure. Just speaking about the legislature, you know, we historically have not done anything we're supposed to do.
There you have the story of Texas, right in your hand.
And, you know, essentially we would do, if we got sued, we'd do it.
Yeah.
Mental health, public ed, prisons. And so we don't fund water conservation. We think the cities should do that. And so it is difficult for the legislature. I mean, we came not more than 10 years ago from requiring cities not to even have a plan. So we went to just have a plan, and then we had a request to have a plan and have goals in it.
Some goals in it.
and don't have to meet the goals, just put them in there.
Yes.
And so that's where we are. And so on the state level, we're very far behind.
Yeah.
And we're
good.
Moving.
Good.
Hopefully.
Yes.
I think so, yes, but actually connecting it to global warming may not help it at all. If you connect it to money, it will. And if I may take this opportunity to talk about two bills last session, one had to do with irrigation of lawns. You know, that is really where the water goes, is to irrigate our lawns. It was a very innovative system to where essentially these sprinkler heads would not work. I mean, it measured wind. It measured moisture in the dirt, moisture in the air. So it really would not work unless the grass needed it. But for a lot of reasons, it didn't pass. But there's a lot of money and water savings there. Another idea was to audit cities on their water usage, their water loss. And these companies would go in and audit the city, find where the leaks are. They wouldn't charge the city a dime, and they would show a savings, and they would get a portion of that savings. That was their fee. Both of these bills, very important, very innovative, goes the right direction, but unfortunately they were just too industry-driven where they were fundamentally unfair, including for cities, because of the way they were structured. But so if you see a little change in them to where either the cities are allowed to control these issues in a bid process or something like that, then I think we're going in that, we can go in that direction, and we'll see some innovative water conservation that maybe is not tied to global warming, but is still serves the same goal that we all want, to lower that consumption rate.
I think what climate change does in this state, whether you believe man is causing it or not, there's clearly some trends there, and what it does in this state is heighten the importance of conservation, both to make our available resources go further to meet the needs of an increasing population without drying up the rivers and streams, but secondly, to reduce risk for municipalities. I mean, really, resilience to climate change is a big theme among water suppliers now, and the number one way to do that is reduce how much you use and you reduce your risk. And so I think it'll play in that way rather than maybe more directly. I had a question.
Mary,
go ahead.
One additional comment or two on that in response to Asher's question. First of all, I think the legislature is very interested right now in energy issues, regardless of whether or not you link them to climate change and impacts of climate change. And I think the information that was provided earlier about the links between energy use and consumption and water use and consumption will be something the legislature will look at, because it has positive benefits, no matter whether you believe in climate change or not, to promote both energy efficiency and certain types of energy, as well as promoting water conservation, because they relate to each other. But the second thing I would say, just in the broader context about global warming, is that I think more and more legislators see the handwriting on the wall, that the national level is going to produce some legislation that is going to address or attempt to address the global warming issue, and it's going to have an impact on Texas. There was a meeting last week of the House Select Committee on Electric Generation and Environmental Impacts, and some of the legislators on that committee were clearly looking at the prospect that Congress was going to enact legislation sometime in the next year or two that would deal with the, or you know, address to some extent the global warming issue, and it would have impacts on Texas, and that they better start looking at how they prepare for that. And one of the things that I thought was particularly instructive was one of the committee members, Representative Solomons, who's a Republican from a suburban city in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, Carrollton, was basically saying, you know, well, he didn't know for sure, you know, what the whole deal was about climate change and all that, but it seemed to him that the smart thing for Texas to do was to go ahead and take advantage of what can be accomplished through promoting green jobs, green industries, energy efficiency, and things like that, because it makes sense even if you don't connect it to climate change. So I think you're going to see things like that happening. I would hope that a few of our major state officials begin to adopt that very pragmatic viewpoint as well to make sure this happens. But I think you're seeing some changes in thinking there.
Question back there somewhere, I thought. It's not. Tim, did you have
a question? I was going to ask you a comment about the question about regionalism. One of the things we would be requesting even with volunteers for the entire region for what they're transition towards. And one of the low cost ways the state could step in and help out small utilities is to offer, if we have a request for a quote for whatever the devices are. And know that if people don't come in with the lowest bid, they stand a chance to be locked up for 2 years on all these cities that we do not allow that purchase.
So the state acts as an aggregator for smaller cities and so at some level.
Single buyer of the market, mm-hmm. The prices go down into the smaller utilities.
Interesting. Bill?
Yeah, I was really happy to see in the report that it was today pointing out that that state goal of 1% per year reduction on average UPCD was a minimum goal.
Right, and not separate and apart from the target itself.
Right, exactly. And I was wondering, because our allegedly green leading city council here in Austin won't even adopt that minimum standard, what have been the rates of improvement in San Antonio and the other cities that have done a good job?
You mean in terms of percent
right.
reduction per year? Can you
well, Aaron, you want to just...
It's much higher than one.
Well, our that slide I had up there will show you the GPCD for any given year that we'd be happy to share with you. But the GPCD back in conservation is starting in San Antonio somewhere around the order of over 1,200. And it's too cold, nothing back out, not even industrial water, it needs nothing. It is too cold in GPCD. It's a solid surface area. And in a very wet year, we're down to 115. That's not normal. Just like Dan mentioned, that's not at all normal. More like probably normalized for weather. So, you know, we can look at our trend line and see what our drop is over time. It depends on which 10 years or so you look at. But it's been like a 3 GPC drop on average over the last 10 years or so.
It's a good question, yeah. Bill. I think it's something we should go back and look at if Ken doesn't already have
well,
it.
Well, I know that some cities have achieved like a 2% per year decrease in consumption over, you know, a decade or two decades or so. You do have to be careful in looking at whether you're talking about a decrease in total annual consumption or a decrease in peak demand, those kinds of things. I think the 1% is not a bad figure, but it sort of depends on where you're starting from, you know, what you've already done and what you're headed for in terms of that ultimate goal.
And that was the point that we tried to make in our report, is that actually the cities that are already doing fairly well had more aggressive reduction targets than the cities that weren't doing so well, and you kind of hope to see the reverse of that.
Yeah, one of the right. Well, one of the things though, that some members of the Water Conservation Implementation Task Force tried to get adopted as a task force recommendation, but we didn't quite have that. What did we call it? Supermajority that was necessary was to have a figure to shoot for in terms of the ratio between winter use, average winter use, and average summer use. Because in some cases, I think was indicated earlier, you find some cities have twice as much water consumption during the summer on an average basis, not even talking about peak day, but on an average basis, as they do during the winter. We were trying to aim for no more than a 1.5 or even less, but that didn't quite pass.
Okay. Why don't I take a couple more questions and then we'll have some closing remarks. Yes, sir.
I wanted to make the right point that water conservation in Texas for our state, we haven't looked at water loss accountability. All these programs today look at what they take the 16,000 gallons that the consumers use, and they look at low-flow shower head and low-flow smog and irrigation models. That's 16,000 gallons that the customers use. Well, let's take the 5 billion gallons that the utility gets. And they can, in the end, they can only count for 4 billion. What about 1 billion? Who is making the utility account for that one? That's what the Water Development Board is doing and implementing.
Study. Right.
And it's important that we all look at water loss accountability as a form of
I think that's really true. And if you look at the water conservation plans, the one we reviewed, they all had, I think it's actually one of the very few explicit requirements for water conservation plans is they have something about loss reduction.
Right.
No way to tell from those plans whether those are real or not. So I think there's a lot South Texas City, not San Antonio, that's in our report, reported a very low water loss rate overall system-wide, which is completely counter to what has always been said about that system. I mean, it was like orders of magnitude less than what's always been said about that system. So I don't know where it really lies in between there. We have any more? We'll take one more in the back and one here, and then we'll wrap up.
Question is for House Bill 4 and the provision for new state facility measures beginning in 2010 to incorporate the water conservation measures such as rainfall harvesting, air conditioning studies, or this one more time. What is the standard for explaining one more time?
Let me go back to say that even having the number 4 on a bill like that is enough to where I could retire on that. Those of you that know the legislature, the lower the number, the more importance the legislature as a whole puts on that issue. Our state budget is always either Senate Bill 1 or House Bill 1. So I was able to convince the Speaker and the other leaders of the House that this was an important issue. It was House Bill 3 and House Bill 4 were both water bills, House Bill 4 being the water conservation bill. So it's in the line of get what you can while you can, essentially. Something as simple as what I mentioned where we mandated that cities start having a plan, exempting small cities at the beginning, and then a session later adding, okay, have a plan, have targets also, have goals in there also. So you see where we're coming from, how far we had to come. Because essentially, you put any kind of mandate in there, your bill will fail. These small rural areas still have a lot of power in the legislature. They are represented by, if you remember, the chairman before me was Chairman David Counts from Knox City. Anybody know where Knox City is? It's in Knox County. The chairman of environmental regulation used to be from Pampa, Texas. So that's where the power was. You know, the growth of cities is moving that power to a more urban, suburban area where you'll see, hopefully, a natural progression on some of these issues.
One more question.
It was pretty much along those lines about, you know, the comprehensive plan we have in place, it seems like there are requirements for plans that don't seem to have a lot of teeth to them, and they particularly don't seem to push down, you know, to the lower levels, like, you know, maybe a higher agency or a district will have a requirement for a plan that doesn't get pushed down to the rest. What's the possibility going forward with that?
Well, incrementally, it's happening. You know, from no plans to plans, exempting smaller cities, we've added them in, having them come in. Essentially, the argument was we're so small, we don't have the resources, we don't have the expertise, and a lot of that was true. Some cities are run by one city manager, and that is it. He or she is also director of public works and in charge of the one police officer there, in charge of everything there. So we did recognize that there was the need for exemptions, the need for a blanket approach. But progressively, I think we are adding. We haven't put any mandates or teeth into a lot of these water conservation bills, but a lot of it is incentive-based. There is a Texas Water Development Board opportunity for grants through them. It's very, very difficult to put any kind of teeth in this legislation. It will probably kill your bill. Mm-hmm. Even when I was chairman of that committee, it would kill that bill.
Well, let me just add on to that a couple of comments and observations. One is that I do want to make sure that all of you focus on the fact this is covered in Amy's report, but she didn't emphasize in the presentation this morning, next May 2009, May 1st, 2009, is the deadline for the entities that have done water conservation plans already under different state requirements to provide an implementation report on their progress in implementing their plans over the preceding what will have been 4 years for this first round. And so we will have an opportunity to see the plans that were revised or done in 2005 will have this implementation reporting mechanism that goes into effect next year. And so that is an opportunity for us to take a look at what is happening and seeing whether or not the utilities that are doing these plans are actually making progress. And I think we'll have a better sense of what's really happening out there, but assumes everybody reports, of course. The second thing is that under House Bill 4, there's a whole new universe of public water utilities that are going to have to do water conservation plans that have not been required to do them in the past. Any retail public water supplier with 3,300 connections or more will have to submit a water conservation plan to the state by May 1st of 2009. So that's going to bring in several hundred more entities that have not had to do the water conservation plans before.
As well as updating those plans that have already.
As well as updating, yes, and thanks. Also, those that have done them in the past will have to, along with their implementation reports, do the update of their plans for another then 5-year increment. So I don't know if we'll see some changes in terms of the law next time on those plans, but I think at least we will see toward the end of the legislative session some of those things coming in, and perhaps that may spark some changes like some more mandates if necessary. If people really aren't taking the planning requirements seriously in implementing the plans, then you may see some changes in that. But I also want to say that there's another requirement in state law for water conservation plans other than just this broad, sort of almost universal now, requirement, and that is for those entities that go to the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality to get a water right, they are required to do a water conservation plan. And I think that's where we need to, first of all, look more seriously at putting more requirements, more substantive requirements on that. Because why should an entity be able to go to TCEQ and get a water right for a new volume of water if they're wasting or not using efficiently the water they already have? That's where we need to focus.
And if that's explained in the report in some detail, and one of our other recommendations that applies both to the water conservation plans that come with surface water permitting requests and the regular municipal water conservation plans is, with all due respect to TCEQ, it's kind of check the boxes. There's no real substantive look at the content of those plans, and that has changed, and TCEQ might need more resources to do that. But there's few environmental issues that are more important to the economic and environmental future of this state than water, and we need to allocate resources within TCEQ to make sure they're actually looking at those plans and helping smaller cities prepare good plans, give them some models, give them some ideas. So with that, why don't I give you all a final word if you'd like it, and then we'll close up the day. Yes, ma'am. Of course.
Here, I'll be the final word too.
Of course.
that this time the 5 and 10 year goals are in there. But you, it also, it's the new rules are out at the Water Development Board, but you've got to show in there, you know, if you're performing your water audits, and you have to show what ordinances you passed in your town that can help you actually implement these different things. And so, and also, if you do not turn that plan in, there is enforcement, you could let that in instead of CCP for enforcement. So, you know, so does that mean the Water Development Board can go out and hammer it and make you do it? No, it doesn't. But it was, the increments are getting a little more tough. And the other thing that's in there in the legislation, some of us passed in HB4, gives priority for funding from the board to those entities that are really exhibiting conservation and or if what you're requesting money for will be a conservation program. So we have moved
a long way.
One other point that I want to make is that on the idea of the state helping out in terms of especially the smaller entities and model water conservation programs, there actually is a requirement in state law for the state agencies involved to come up with model water conservation programs or plans. But the way it's been interpreted is basically coming up with a template with, you know, different parts of a conservation plan need to be in a conservation plan. And so, you know, you check off the box and make sure you've got those parts of the conservation plan. It doesn't have really any specifics about, well, what should your goal be if you're this size city with this type of mix or whatever. So I think one of the things that we need to try to get the agencies to do is come up with real model water conservation programs that are probably tailored to different size cities or different size water utilities. Because, you know, what works for San Antonio is not necessarily going to want to work for Kyle. But, you know, that kind of thing is something that I think the state could be really a source of assistance for the smaller communities, especially in doing water conservation programs.
Jan or Tim?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on that, too, because there are the templates for the water conservation plan itself, but, you know, there's a difference between the plan and the program. And writing the plan is actually the easy part. That's, you know, there's a lot that comes after that. Actually implementing the program is the difficult, expensive, time-consuming part. So I think that is something that really needs to be in there is some templates, yeah, and definitely they have to be tailored to the different sizes because there's no one-size-fits-all type thing. There's different situations. There are different types of programs that may be effective in one city but not effective in another. So I think there just needs to be a really sort of comprehensive database of different conservation program ideas and how to implement them successfully.
Is this the wrap-up?
Yeah.
Okay. Again, thank you for inviting me to speak. Water conservation, I think, is like criminal justice system, educational system. It's evolving. It is never perfected. We always have to try to do better things and copy where it's working well and encourage those that aren't doing it to come on board. I think it is an issue that has turned the corner. We're on our way. It's something that hopefully will continue. And I think it will because of the things that we mentioned. It's just an issue that I don't know if I had some of these ideas on my own or they were given to me by the mother of all water conservation, Carol Baker over there. But it was a pleasure working with all of y'all, Ken, Mary, on some of these issues. And I think we can do it. We just have to be very vigilant on these efforts.
Let's give a round of applause to our speaker. And before we go, I just want to thank Laura Marbury for putting together the agenda, for working at the conference. And I want to thank Alicia Isakura, Jennifer Walker, Donna Hoffman, the latter two from Sierra Club, for helping us with logistics during the day. And thanks to all our speakers, and most of all, thanks to all of you for joining us today. Go out and have a great weekend.